accepted the consequences for his own actions, bared his guilt to the men and women around him. He had thought it would be more painful than slicing open his own guts, and it was, but he had survived the pain. Like a man facing suicide, he had confronted the worst he could imagine and come through it alive. Voznesensky sank gratefully into the nearest wardroom chair. His legs were so weak he could not stand any longer. "A good thing that I will be able to sit all the way out to the canyon," he told himself. "I only hope I will be able to drive the damned rover without collapsing like a weak old woman." Jamie was sitting in the cockpit again, Joanna beside him. Connors was stretched out on his bunk, moaning softly in his sleep. Ilona was also trying to sleep, on the bunk above the astronauts. None of them had possessed the strength to fold the cots back. They had eaten their gloomy breakfast, sitting on the edges of the lower cots, heads bent low to avoid bumping the uppers. "Vitamin deficiency," Jamie mused. "Of all the things that could have gone wrong with this mission, we come down with scurvy. Talk about Murphy's Law." Joanna seemed barely awake, but she said,
"Knowing what the problem is, somehow, it does not seem so bad. It was the unknown that frightened me."
"It can still kill us, whether we know what it is or not." She smiled wanly.
"You won't let us die, Jamie. I know you won't."
"Why is she putting this load on me?" he wondered, half angry. But aloud he said to her, "There's not much any of us can do now, except wait." Joanna's weak little smile widened slightly, as if she knew something that Jamie did not. The comm unit buzzed. Jamie flicked the switch, and Abel's frog-like face appeared on the control panel screen. He looked just as sallow and gaunt as the four in the rover, his sunken cheeks making his protruding eyes seem to pop out even more than usual.
"There's a message coming in for Joanna from Kaliningrad," Abel said. "Is she up and about?"
"I am here," Joanna said, leaning enough from the pilot seat so that Abel could see her, even though the miniature camera built into the control panel was aimed at Jamie.
"Oh, good. I'll tell them up in Mars 2 to pipe it right down to you."
"How are you doing?" Jamie asked. Abel swung his head back and forth.
"Reed's pumping so much vitamin C into us that I feel like I'm turning into an orange grove. I can shake my head without getting woozy, but I still feel like canned dog food."
Jamie realized that he felt like used dog food, and that Abel refrained from asking how he felt.
"Dimitri and Ollie are outside re-rigging the spare rover. Mikhail's straw-bossing them over the TV link and making their lives miserable. He's too weak to go out there himself, so he's giving them hell every inch of the way."
"How long before they get underway?" Jamie asked.
"Another hour, two at most. Mikhail's taking Dimitri with him. Ollie's sore as hell."
"No sense risking more skins than you have to," Jamie said.
"Reed's coming, too."
"Tony? Going outside?"
"Yeah. He says you'll need a medic by the time they get to you."
"That's a comforting thought," Jamie said to himself. Abel said,
"Okay. I'll tell them to shoot you the message from Kaliningrad."
The screen cleared briefly, flickered. Then the image of a tired old man took form. His red hair was rumpled, his sharp little Van Dyke beard messy, his shirt collar unbuttoned. He identified himself as the chief of mission control.
"My message is for Dr. Joanna Brumado, and it is of a personal nature. It is a question, actually, that Dr. Brumado must answer for us."
Jamie swiveled the little ball-mounted camera on the control panel toward Joanna, while the mission controller hesitated, as if waiting for him or expecting a reply. Then he took a deep breath and plunged onward.
"Dr. Brumado, this question concerns your father. As you know, he has been quite close to the day-to-day operations of our mission. Naturally, he has been informed of your predicament. He is already heading for Houston. I have given strict orders that no one outside mission control is to know about the problem we are now facing until the situation has been resolved. This is to forestall the media from sensationalizing the situation, you see.
Jamie thought, I sure as hell see that they don't want the media to know the fix we're in. They'd be buried alive by reporters.
However,
the chief controller went on,
apparently, your father is being accompanied by a representative of the American news media, a young woman television reporter. We have not been able to learn her affiliation, although we have her name.
The Russian looked down, obviously reading from a piece of paper. He pronounced stiffly,
Idi Elgin.
Joanna frowned. Jamie felt a jolt of surprise. Edith? With Brumado? The chief controller looked distinctly uncomfortable.
Your father will want to speak with you, of course. Apparently, this newswoman with him wants permission to tape your conversation for possible broadcast after this crisis is resolved. The tape would not be released, of course, without the permission of the Mars Project administrators, and your father's permission also, of course.
She's hooked up with Brumado, Jamie realized. Son of a bitch! And she wants to make a tape of their conversation. What a cold-blooded piece of genius that is. If we die, she'll have terrific footage of the last tender moments between father and daughter. If we live, it'll still be great human interest material for her. And she hasn't asked to contact me. She doesn't give a damn about me. Why the hell should she? She's got Brumado now. The chief controller was asking Joanna,
will you be able to conduct a brief conversation with your father, allowing for the time lag between transmission and reception of messages, of course?
Joanna glanced up at Jamie, then seemed to draw herself up taller and straighter in the cockpit seat. I appreciate your solicitude toward my father and myself, and I thank you for it. But please, do not bother to arrange a special transmission for us, Joanna said, more firmly than Jamie had ever heard her speak before. I repeat, do not set up a link with Houston. I want no special privileges. If you have chosen to maintain a news blackout about this problem we are facing, then please do not consider me to be an exception. Jamie cut off the transmission switch. Wait a minute, he said. Doesn't your father have a right? Her red-rimmed eyes flared at him. I am not a little girl who must talk with her papa when she is in trouble. I want to be treated just the same way you and the others are treated. But he's Alberto Brumado, Jamie said. It's not you that they want to give special treatment to. It's him. Joanna tried to shake her head. The effort made her grip the edge of the control panel with a white-knuckled hand. No, I would not be able to keep my strength in front of him. I would break down and cry. I will not have that put on videotape. Oh, I see. I guess. Jamie, if it becomes certain that we are going to die here, then there will be plenty of time to speak to my father. Each of us will tape messages for our families, I am sure. I guess so. And Edith will get it all for the goddamn primetime news. But not now. I have not given up hope. You have not given up hope, have you? Hell no, he said, with a fervor that he did not truly feel. Then, turn the transmitter on once again. Jamie did. Joanna took a breath, brushed her hands unconsciously through her tousled hair. I appreciate your offer, she said calmly, with great dignity. But my decision is that I want to be treated exactly like the others. I expect you to keep my father informed of our situation and the newswoman with him. Thank you very much. She's as sore about Edith as I am, Jamie saw. The realization gave him no comfort at all. Dmitry Iosifovich Ivchenko was at the controls of the backup rover, a crooked grin on his pinched face. He He is happy to be on the ground doing something useful instead of sitting up